see. They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without face. A man without a 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 face.
Welcome, dear ladies and gentlemen, to the Rabbit Hole Radio Show with your host, David James. Deja vu. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. And wherever you are listening, may the Father comfort you. May He keep you in His perfect love. May you love Him, obey Him, and think of Him often, both in the good times and the bad. I want to thank those that have stepped up to the plate to help me. Thank you very much. It means a lot to know that I'm not doing this for no reason at all, you know, that I'm speaking to the wind, so to speak. I don't want to just be a voice crying in the wind. I want to be somebody that's actually reaching you, reaching as many of you, of our brethren, as possible, brothers and sisters. Thank you so much for your unselfishness. I mean, it's really wonderful to know that people care. And it's wonderful to know that people still care about supporting the work of the kingdom. I'm doing my best to bring this all to you and to equip you as a soldier in the army of Yahweh, that you may be able to defend the gospel of Jesus Christ and that you may know the footsteps of your enemy and what your enemy is up to, has been up to, and will be up to. Because you will understand the patterns of this enemy, and when you see these things happen, you'll know who's doing it. So this is important, and I just want to thank you. I hope that the rest of you that have not stepped up to the plate will finally make that step and help so that you can keep me bringing these shows to you. And, you know, I bring my shows to you for free. And I've worked thousands and thousands and thousands of hours. So, thank you very much for all that you do. And thank you for what all of you do, whether you support me or not, what you do for the kingdom. Everything that you do for the kingdom, it's important. And I hope that you'll even try to do more for the kingdom as the days go by. As we get closer and closer to the returning of the Messiah. So, a brother who calls himself Simon Peter, he sent this in, and I thought that we'd look it over. And it's also about Edom in Rome, but it's about Edox and Idumea, and it's by Richard Gotheil and M. Seligson. Okay. It says Edom is the name which was given to Esau, the firstborn son of Isaac, on the day he sold his birthright to Jacob for a mess of pottage, the reddish color of which gives it its name. Adam, the country which was subsequently inhabited by Esau, that says Edom, A-D-O-M. I think it's supposed to mean Edom, I don't know. Genesis 25, verse 30. The country that was which was subsequently inhabited by Esau and his descendants was called the Field of Edom, or the Land of Edom. Edom in the Bible is also used as an equivalent for Edomites, though the expression, the children of Edom, occurs but once. The country had before been called Mount Seir, from Seir, S-E-I-R, quote-unquote, the progenitor of the Horites, who lived there previously. According to Josephus, the name Seir is due to the fact that Esau was hairy. But according to Genesis 14, verse 6, the mountain was called Seir long before Esau's birth. The boundaries of Edom are very concisely defined. The country stretched along the route followed by the Israelites from the Sinaitic peninsula, you know, the peninsula of Sinai, to Kadesh Barnea, that is, along the east side of the valley of Araba. Southward, it reached as far as Elath, which was the seaport of Edom. On the north of Edom was the territory of Moab. The boundary between Moab and Edom was the brook Zered. The ancient capital of Edom was Bozra. In the time of Amaziah, 838 BC, Sela was its principal stronghold, 2 Kings 14, verse 7. Elath and Ezion-Geber, its seaports, 1 Kings 9:26. Contrary to the promise of Isaac that Esau's dwelling would be of the fatness of the earth and of the dew of heaven, Edom was a rocky and calcareous country. Esau is described as a man who subsisted by hunting, as his descendants, the Edomites, did, living amid rocky fastnesses and mountain heights. The name Mount Seir, or Mount of Esau, shows that Edom was a mountainous country, and therefore it was called by later writers Gebelin, the mountainous. Rulers of Edom. According to the Bible, immediately after Isaac's death, Esau settled in Mount Seir. That was from Genesis 36, verse 6 and 8, where he had lived before. The Edomites soon became powerful enough to extirpate the Horites. I believe the Horites were people that lived in the rocks. They actually made homes in the rocks of the mountains, the Horites, the former inhabitants of the country. So they, the Edomites extirpated them. And, of course, they adopted the life and their ways. As among the Horites, each tribe was ruled by a prince or chief whose position resembled probably that of an Arab sheikh. Later, the Edomites organized themselves into a kingdom and had 8 kings. When the first king in Israel began his reign, however, a list of chiefs given after that of the kings shows that subordinate chiefs ruled under the sovereignty of the king. In the time of Moses, both chiefs and king are mentioned. When the king of Edom refused to allow the children of Israel to pass through his land on their way to the land of Canaan, the Israelites were expressly ordered not to wage war upon the Edomites, but to go around their country. Neither did the king of Edom attempt hostilities against the Israelites, though he prepared to resist aggression. Nothing further is heard of the Edomites until their defeat by Saul 400 years later. 44 years later, David overthrew the Edomites in the Valley of Salt, and his general Joab slew all their males. Hadad, one of the royal family, fled to Egypt, and after David's death, returned and endeavored to excite his countrymen to rebellion, failing in which he went to Syria. From that time, Edom remained subject to Israel. David placed over the Edomites Israelite governors or prefects, and this form of government seems to have continued under Solomon. When Israel divided into two kingdoms, Edom became a dependency of Judah. In the time of Jehoshaphat, now isn't that interesting that when Israel divided into two kingdoms, meaning the two sticks, Edom became a dependency of Judah. Isn't it funny that the Jews are dependent on us today, and yet they have more money, they have half the world's wealth. But they depend on us to stop anti-Jewishism and all these different things, right? Isn't it interesting? So, in the time of Jehoshaphat, 914 BC, a king of Edom is mentioned, 2 Kings, who was probably a Judean appointed by the king of Judah. It is stated further in Chronicles that the inhabitants of Mount Seir invaded Judea in conjunction with the Ammon and Moab, and that the invaders turned against one another and were all destroyed. Edom revolted against Jehoram, elected a king of its own, and afterward retained its independence. That's from 2 Kings. Amaziah attacked the Edomites and slew 10,000 in battle, 10,000 more being dashed to pieces from the cliffs. Their stronghold, Selah, was taken, but the Israelites were never able to subdue Edom completely. 2 Kings. In the time of Nebuchadnezzar, the Edomites took an active part in the plunder of Jerusalem and in the slaughter of the Jews, the Israelites. Boy, it is on account of these cruelties that Edom was so violently denounced by the prophets. Unbelievable. Post-biblical times, Edom is mentioned in the cuneiform inscriptions in the form Udami. Three of its kings are known from the same source: Kaus Malaka at the time of Tiglath Pileser, that's 745, Malik Ramu at the time of Sennacherib, 705, and Kaus Gabri at the time of Esarhaddon. According to the Egyptian inscriptions, the Aduma at the times extended their possessions down as far as the borders of Egypt. After the conquest of Judah by the Babylonians, the Edomites were allowed to settle in southern Palestine. Yes, this is exactly what I was talking about, you see. Once we were taken to Babylon, they settled down in Palestine. And from what I understand, this Judah, Judea was in the territory of Benjamin. See, there were no borders in Israel at that time, in that part of Israel, with Judah and between Judah and Benjamin. But for some reason, rather than Jerusalem, this was Judea was in the territory of Benjamin. So the Edomites got in there and the other tribes, you know, the typical Jebusites and all those parasites, you know, and that's the way that goes. So it says that the Edomites were allowed to settle in southern Palestine. At the same time, they were driven by the Nabataeans from Idumea in southern Palestine. They prospered for more than four centuries. Judas Maccabeus conquered their territory for a time. B.C. 163, it says. They were again subdued by John Hyrcanus in 125 B.C., by whom they were forced to observe Israelite rites and laws. It says Jewish rites and laws. the game goes on, ladies and gentlemen. They were then incorporated with the Israelite nation. It says Jewish again. And their country was called by the Greeks and Romans Idumea. With Antipater began the Idumean dynasty that ruled over Judea till its conquest by the Romans. Immediately before the siege of Jerusalem, 20,000 Idumeans under the leadership of John, Simeon, Phinehas, and Jacob appeared before Jerusalem to fight on behalf of the Zealots who were besieged in the temple. I guess Josephus had said this. So from that time, the Idumeans ceased to be a separate people, though the name Idumea still existed in the time of Jerome. According to the law, the congregation could not receive descendants of marriage between Israelite and Edomite until the fourth generation. This law was a subject of controversy between R. Simeon and other Talmudists who maintained that female descendants were also excluded until the fourth generation. Contrary to R. Simeon, who regarded the limitation as applicable in only to male descendants. Well, what's interesting anyway is that this is not Yahweh's decree. And so this mixing is the same thing that goes on today. Israelite and Edomite mixing is forbidden. That means Israelite and Jewish mixing. Mixing is forbidden completely. The only thing that you could do is if you were from another tribe in Israel, they were all white, so that's okay. But when we're talking about somebody that's outside of the family of Israel, which are the 12 tribes, it's not okay. And the Edomites are outside of that, as you know. So, you know, these people love to write these things to confuse things. But let's continue. Use of name. The name Edom is used by the Talmudists. Okay, I want you to listen to this again. You ready for this? The name Edom is used by the Talmudists for the Roman Empire. And they applied to Rome every passage of the Bible referring to Edom or to Esau. In Leviticus, Rabbah, Rome under the name of Edom is compared to a boar, and the symbolic name Seir was used by the poets of the Middle Ages, not only for Rome, but also for Christianity. Isn't that weird? Now, don't you think that's a little strange? The Christianity from Rome is not real Christianity. So maybe this term Christianity isn't, you know, in other words, Christ is a title. Let's think this out for a second, right? Christ is a title. So it's not Jesusianity or something like that. It's Christianity. I mean, the world is waiting for the Maitreya, the Christ. So if you followed him, you would follow also Christianity, no? So maybe this term Christianity is not for us in the first place. You know, that's an interesting thing if you think about it, because Christ doesn't mean it's Jesus. Christ is a title. You see? So that's kind of strange. On this account, the word Edom was often expunged by the censor and another name substituted. That's from Popper, Censorship of Hebrew Books, page 58. In place of Edom, the word Hazir, or swine, you see, isn't that always what's used for the Jews? When they were to convert to so-called Christianity, which was Catholicism, which is not Christian, which is not, you know, anything, it's not us, it's a pagan meld with the things of our scriptures melted into it. Israelitanity. You know, so basically, isn't that interesting that they called them the Murano Jews, the swine? And Jesus says, cast not your pearls before swine, lest they trample you underfoot. So isn't it funny that it says here, in place of Edom, the word Hazir, quote unquote, that's H-A-Z-I-R, swine, was occasionally used, perhaps as a mere term of reproach. But see Epstein, Betrage Zur Jude, Alter Thumpskund, page 35. How are you going to see that? In Midrash Tanhuma, Bereshit, that, I'm not swearing, Hadrian is called the king of Edom. So this is in Midrash Tahuma Bereshit, or Bereshit, it says Bereshit. That's the Talmud. Hadrian is called the king of Edom. The Talmudists, however, make an exception in favor of Antoninus Pius, whom they assured would attain paradise because he had not acted in the manner of Esau. Abzara. You know, what's funny is the Jews know that they are Edom. They know that, and they've written it in their dictionaries. You know, I've mentioned it so many times that Edom is in modern Jewry. Now, this is something they've said. I didn't, you know, nobody made it up or anything like that. This is something out of the Jewish encyclopedia. So they know that they are Edom. The funny thing is they want to call the white people the Amalekites. But I've already explained, if you go to the front page of davidjamesboston.com and go down until you see the green picture, you will be explained how Amalek was born through Esau, one of Esau's sons. So Amalek is of the Edomites, you see. See, the Jews know that they've already claimed that they are Edom, so they can't call us the Edomites, you see. They got themselves in a little corner there. So anyway, it says, Obadiah verse 2 says that Edom had neither written nor spoken language. This is inconsistent with its application to Rome. So that's quite an interesting thing to be looked at. I would like to see if I can get this. Okay. This is what I was telling you about before, how, you know, now you just saw that the Jews in the Talmud refer to Rome as Edom. And I told you about all these curly-haired statues, you know, and some of them have hooked noses, some of them don't. But you see the violence in Rome year by year. I mean, let's just look through this. I remember looking through this before, and it is just bizarre. Now, it's not every year, but it really gets heavy at a point, all right? So this is 753 BC, as we learned a couple of weeks ago. Rome was founded, according to Roman legend. Romulus was the founder and the first king of Rome, establishing the Roman kingdom. And Romulus was an Edomite. 715 BC, Numa Pompilius became the second king of Rome. 673 BC, Tullus Hostilius became the third king of Rome. 667 BC, Byzantium was founded by Megarian colonists. 642 BC, Tullus Hostilius died. The Curiate Assembly, one of the legislative assemblies of the Roman kingdom, elected Ancus Marcius, or Marcius, at king of Rome. 617, Ancus Marcius died. 616, the Curiate Assembly elected Lucius, which means light, Tarquinius Priscus, king of Rome. 6th century BC, 575 BC, the Senate accepted the regent Servius Tullus as king of Rome. 535 BC, Servius Tullus was murdered by his daughter, Tullia Minor, and her husband, Lucius Tarquinius Superbus, who declared himself king of Rome on the steps of the Curia Hostilia. 509 BC, the patrician Lucretia was raped by Lucius Tarquinius Superbius' son, Sextus Tarquinius. This is still 509. Overthrow of the Roman monarchy. Following Lucretia's suicide, Lucius Junius Brutus called the Curiate Assembly, one of the legislative assemblies of the Roman kingdom. The latter agreed to overthrow the expulsion of Lucius Tarquinius Superbus and to a provisional constitution under which two consuls acted as a joint executive and curiate assembly held legislative power and swore never to again let a king rule Rome. It further elected Lucius Junius Brutus and Lucius Tarquinius Collatinus, Lucretia's husband, as consuls. Battle of Silva, Arcea. Tarquinian and Valentine forces loyal to Lucius Tarquinius Superbus were defeated in the Silva Arcea by the Roman army. Lucius Junius Brutus was killed. Publius Valerius Publicola, returning to Rome with the spoils of war, was awarded the Roman triumph on March 1st. This is all in one year happening. The consul Publius Valerius Publicola promulgated a number of liberal reforms, including opening the office of consul to all Roman citizens and placing the treasury under the administration of appointed quaestors. The temple of Jupiter Optimus Maximus was ceremonially dedicated to the Capitoline Triad. Now we're finally to 508 BC. Roman Etruscan Wars. A Clusian army failed to conquer Rome. 501 BC. In the face of a potential Sabine. So I guess there was a few years here and there. Okay. In the face of potential Sabine invasion, the Senate passed a Senatus Consultum authorizing the consuls to appoint a dictator, a magistrate who held absolute power during a national emergency. Does that sound familiar to you? Can you say FDR? Can you say T-Rump? See, that's the thing. They authorized the consuls to appoint a dictator, a magistrate who held absolute power during a national emergency. So then what does America do then? Well, they just keep the national emergency going. If we're not at war, we're at war with some kind of a disease. Or if we're not at war with that, we're at war with the bankers or something. So there's always a national emergency. And there's always a dictator ruling over us, you see? It says the dictator would, in turn, appoint the magister equitum, the commander of the cavalry, you know, the army, the navy, you know, the forces. The forces, get it? The consuls Titus Lartius and Postumus Cominius Auruncus selected the former as dictator. 496 BC, the Battle of Lake Regillus. See, like, you know, I mean, this is just, it goes on. I guess there's some years of peace here. I didn't notice really, you know, as it goes on, though, it gets less years of peace. But you'll see there's a few years of peace, but very little peace going on. Battle of Lake Regillus, Latin League, invasion near modern Frascati, which sought to reinstall Lucius Tarquinius Superbus, 494 BC. First Secessio Plebis, Lucius Sucinius Volutus, the plebs abandoned Rome for the nearby Monte Sacro, 471 BC. So there was a little period there, 94 to 471. After a law allowing organization of the plebs tribe, the plebeian council was reorganized by tribes rather than curiae. 459 BC. Under popular pressure, the Senate increased the tribunes, or the tribunes of the plebs, from 2 to 10. 458 BC. During the first dictatorship of Cincinnatus, the Equians staged an offensive, breaking a truce. Cincinnatus defeated the Equians at the Battle of Mount Algidus after a triumph, returned to his farm after 16 days. 449 BC. So there's a 9-year period there or whatever. 11 year or whatever it is. 58, 68, yeah, 11 years. Resolutions of the plebeian council were given full force of law, subjected to Senate veto. The second of the two decemviri, specially elected 10-man commissions, issued in the last 12 tables the fundamental laws of the Republic. 447 BC, so it's getting a little closer now, see? The tribunal assembly was established and granted the right to elect quaestors. A quaestor was a public official in ancient Rome. The position served different functions depending on the period. Okay, let me get that back. In the Roman kingdom, quaestors parasiti were appointed by the king to investigate and handle murders. In the Roman Republic, quaestors were elected officials who supervised. That's about all we see. Okay, there you go. So just to know what that is. Now, 2 years later, 445 BC, Lex Canulia, marriage between patricians and plebeians, was legalized. What is plebeians? The general body of free Roman citizens who were not patricians. Commoners. Patricians were originally the group of ruling class families. So in other words, they allowed that the ruling class families could marry the commoners of Rome. That's what that means. 443, 2 years later, the offices of the tribuni militum consulari proselyte were established, a collegium of three patrician or plebeian tribunes, one each from the specific Roman tribes. The Titienses, the Ramnenses, and the Lucers would hold the power of the consuls from year to year, subject to the Senate. This is still in 443. The office of the censor, a patrician magistrate responsible for conducting the census in years without a consul, was established. Doesn't this sound like today? Cincinnatus, this is 439. Cincinnatus was called upon to accept a second dictatorship by the patricians to prevent Spurius Malus from seizing power. The patricians suspected Spurius of using wheat to purchase the support of the plebeians, you know, the commoners, to set himself up as king. Gaius Servilius Ahala was appointed magister equitum in order to stop Malleus. Following an attack by Malleus, Ahala slew him. Cincinnatus again resigned his dictatorship and returned to his farm after 21 days. Fadenai, an important trade post on the Tiber, was captured from the Veli. 408. So there was some time there. Okay, now we're down from 435 to 408. The Tribuni Militum Consulari Potestate held office. So it gets a little closer in, you know, here and there. Okay, 396, Battle of Veii, that's V-E-I-I. Roman forces led by the dictator Marcus Furius Camillus conquered Veii. Roman soldiers first earned a salary, which salary is from the Latin for salt, 394 B.C., the consuls held office, 391 B.C. The Tribuni Militum Consulari Protestat held office, 390 B.C. Battle of Allia. The Senones routed a Roman force at the confluence of the rivers of Allia and Tiber. The Senones sacked Rome, 367 B.C. So there was a time between 390 and 367. The consuls held office. 366 B.C., Lucius Sextius was elected the first plebeian consul. The office of praetor, which took the judiciary responsibilities of the consul, could then be held only by a patrician, was established. 351 B.C., the first plebeian dictator was elected. The first plebeian censor was elected. 343 B.C., Samnite Wars. Rome marched against the Samnites, probably after an appeal from the Campanians. Battle of Mount Garus. A Samnite force was routed by a Roman army near Mount Barbaro. 342 BC. Now we're getting a little closer in the years here. The Leges Genucae were passed, banning a person from holding two offices at the same time, or during any 10-year period, charging interest on loans was also banned. Boy, we could use that here, huh? 341 B.C., Samnite Wars. The Senate agreed a peace following an appeal by the Samnite to a previous treaty of friendship. 340 B.C., a Latin War. So here we are. We're starting to get wars every year now. I mean, it's getting crazier and crazier. So 340, Latin War. The Latin League invaded Samnium. 339 B.C., a law was passed which required the election of at least one plebeian censor every 5 years. Means one from the people, you know, the commoners. 338 B.C., Latin War. Rome defeated the Latin League armies. 337 B.C., the first plebeian praetor was elected. Now, there's a little time between this. 328 B.C., the Samnite Wars. Rome declared war on the Samnites after their failure to prevent their subjects raiding Fregellae. 321, a little difference there. 321, Battle of Caudine Forks. It's Caudine Forks, excuse me. After being trapped in a mountain pass near Caudium without a water supply, Roman forces were allowed to retreat by the Samnite army. 315 B.C., battle at Lotalae. A decisive Samnite victory near Terracina split Roman territory in two. 311 B.C., Samnite Wars. The Etruscans laid siege to Sutri. 310 B.C., now everything is getting closer. Samnite Wars. The Umbri, Picentes, and Marci joined the Samnites against Rome. 306 B.C., the Hernici declared their independence from Rome. 305 B.C., the Battle of Bovanium. A Roman force destroyed the majority of the Samnite army. 304, Roman conquered the Aequi. Samnite Wars, the treaty of friendship between Romans and Samnites, was restored. 300 BC, the Lex Ogulnia was passed, allowing plebeians to become priests. 298 BC, Samnite Wars. Rome declared war on the Samnites after an appeal by the Luciani. Samnite Wars, same year. Rome captured the Samnite cities of Boiano and Castel di Sangro. 297 BC, see how it's like closer all the time? 297 BC, the Battle of Tifernum. A Roman army defeated a numerically superior Samnite force at Città di Castello. 295 BC, 2 years later. Battle of Sentinium. A Roman army decisively defeated a numerically superior force of Samnites, Etruscans, Umbri, and Senones in coalition at Sentinium. The consul Publius Decius Mus, consul 312 BC, was killed. 294 BC, Samnite Wars, Roman and Samnite forces battle at Lucera. 293 BC, you see what I'm saying? This is insane. The Battle of Aquilonia, a Roman army destroyed the majority of Samnite forces, probably in modern Agnone. A census counted about 270,000 residents of Rome. 291, just 2 years later, 291 BC, Samnite Wars again. Rome conquered and colonized the Samnite city of Venosa. 290 BC, Samnite Wars. The last effective Samnite resistance was eliminated. 287 BC, Conflict of the Orders. A secessio plebis took place. Conflict of the Orders. The Lex Hortensia was passed, made resolutions of the plebeian council, the plebiscites, binding on all Romans. They formally only applied to plebeians. 283 BC, Battle of Lake Vadimo, 283 BC. A Roman army defeated a combined force of Etruscans, Boii, and Senones near Lake Vadimo. 281 BC, Taranto appealed to Epirus for aid against Rome. 280 BC, Pyrrhic War. An Epirote army of some 25,000 landed at Taranto. Same year, Battle of Heraclea, a Greek coalition force led by the Epirote king, Pyrrhus of Epirus, defeated a Roman army after their deployment of war elephants at Heraclea Luciana. 279 BC, battle. There's no peace now. There's very few years of peace here now. It just keeps going and going and going. Battle of Asculum, a Greek force led by the Epirote king Pyrrhus defeated a Roman army at modern Asculi Satriano despite suffering heavy losses. 275 BC. Now there's 4 years between that and, you know, stuff like that. Battle of Beneventum, 275 BC. Roman and Epirote armies met in bloody battle at Benevento. 272, the Pyrrhic War. Pyrrhus withdrew his army to Epirus. Pyrrhic War. Taranto surrendered to Rome. 267 BC. The number of quesitors was raised from 4 to 10. 264 BC. Battle of Messana. A Roman force defeated Carthaginian and Syracusani garrison at Messina. 242. Now, there was some years there now, 264 to 242. Now, there was at least some years there, right? The office of the praetor, qui inter peregrinos uis dicit, a praetor with jurisdiction over foreigners, was created. 241 BC, First Punic War. Sicily was organized as the province of Sicilia. 238 BC, Mercenary War. Carthage surrendered its claims on Sardinia and Corsica to Rome. 229 BC, Illyrian Wars. Rome invaded the territory of Ardea. 228 BC, Illyrian Wars. The RDA surrendered some territory, including strategically significant ports to Rome, ending the war. 225 BC. But, you know, so there's a few years here and there where nothing is talked about, but this is just complete, you know, it, and it gets crazier and crazier as it goes along. I mean, you know, think about how much I've read already. It's amazing. Again, you know, 225 BC, Battle of Telamon. A Roman army decisively defeated a Gallic invasion near modern Telamone. The consul Gaius Attilus Regulus was killed. 219 BC, Illyrian Wars. Rome invaded Havar. 218 BC, Second Punic War. A Carthaginian army departed Cartagena. Illyrian Wars. Demetrius of Pharos fled to Macedonia. 216 BC, Battle of Cannae. The Carthaginian general Hannibal decisively defeated a numerically superior Roman force at Cannae. 214 BC, the First Macedonian War. A Macedonian fleet captured Oricum, however you say that. Siege of Syracuse. See, isn't that funny? See, now you know where that is, right? Rome laid siege to Syracuse. Now, Syracuse is in New York, right? Just like Syracuse is down by the Little Italy there on the islands, you see? That's why I call it Little Jew York. 212 BC, the Siege of Syracuse. Roman forces breached the inner citadel of Syracuse and slaughtered its inhabitants. 205 BC, there's a little period between there. First Macedonian War. Rome and Macedonia signed a treaty of Phoenicia, according to which Macedonia renounced its allegiance with Carthage in exchange for Roman recognitions of its gains in Illyria. 204 BC, Second Punic War. The consul Scipio Africanus landed an invasion fleet at Utica. Utica's in New York again, too, you see. 202 BC, Battle of Zama. A Roman army decisively defeated Carthage, probably near modern Sakiet City Yusef. 201 BC, Second Punic War, Carthage accepted Roman conditions for peace, including disarmament, a war indemnity of 10,000 talents, and the cessation of Iberia, ending the war. 2nd century BC. I mean, this just, you see what I mean? This, it's just unbelievable. 200 BC, 2nd Macedonian War. A Roman fleet arrived in Illyria to relieve a Macedonian siege of Abydos. 197 BC, 3 years later, the provinces of Hispania Ulterior and Hispania Citerior were organized. The number of quaestors was increased to 12. The number of praetors was increased to 6. 196 BC, Second Macedonian War. Again, Macedonia surrendered its conquests in Greece and agreed to pay a war indemnity, ending the war. 192, 4 years later, Roman Seleucid War. The Seleucid Empire invaded Greece. 188. Now, there was a little reprise there from 192 to 188. Roman Seleucid War. The Seleucid Empire signed a treaty of Apamea, under which it surrendered all territory west of the Taurus Mountains to the Roman clients Rhodes and Pergamon, and agreed to disarm its navy and pay a war indemnity of 15,000 talents of silver to Rome. 180 BC, that's 8 years later, the Lex Vilia Annalis, which established minimum ages for high office and required a minimum of 2 years in private life between offices, was passed. Then there's a little 180 to 172. The Third Macedonian War. Rome declared war on Macedonia. 167 BC, Third Macedonian War. The Macedonian king Perseus of Macedon was captured. Macedonia was divided into four districts subject to Rome. Another reprise of a little time. 155 BC, the Lusitanian War. The Lusitanians of Hispania Ulterior rebelled against Rome. 150 BC, Fourth Macedonian War. And Andriscus rebelled against Rome, claiming to be Perseus' son and the rightful king of Macedonia. 149 BC, the Third Punic War. Rome declared war on Carthage. The Lex Calpurnia was passed, establishing a praetor-led court to hear appeals against. Now, a praetor, right, is, or it's even spelled P-R-E-T-O-R in English, was a title granted by the government of ancient Rome to men acting in one of two official capacities, the commander of an army or an elected magistrate. Okay, I just wanted to let you know. So this was passed, establishing a praetor-led court to hear appeals against extortionate taxes levied by the governors in the provinces, or the provinces, excuse me. 148 BC, Fourth Macedonian War, Andriscus was surrendered to Rome to be executed. 146 BC, Third Punic War. Now, you know, what's interesting is you may be just kind of shocked to hear of all these wars, but wait till we get to the point where we haven't even got to the point where, you know, all these, you know, people start killing each other left and right. You know what I mean? All these Caesars. Wait till you hear that part of this too. It's like a war in itself. 146 BC, the Third Punic War. Roman forces breached the city of Carthage, burned it, and enslaved its surviving inhabitants. Achaean War. Roman forces, this is all in one year. Roman forces decisively defeat the armies of Achaean League at Corinth. The province of Macedonia was organized. The province of Africa was organized on captured Carthaginian territory. 139 BC, Lusitanian War. The Lusitanian leader, Varatus, was assassinated by his three ambassadors to Rome, Audax, Dictylcus, and Minurus. Also, Lex Gabinia Taliboria required a secret ballot in elections of all magistrates. 133 BC, the tribune of the plebs, Tiberius Gracchus, was beaten to death by a mob of senators led by the Pontifex Maximus Publius Cornelius Scipio Nasica Serapio. How do you like that name? Consul, 138 BC. 121 BC, the province of Gallia Narbonensis was organized. The first Senate Consultum Ultimum was passed, granting the consul Lucius Opimius, let me say that again, Lucius Opimius, emergency powers to defeat the partisans of Gaius Gracchus. 112 BC, a little bit of time between there, the Jarathene War. Rome declared war on Numidia. 107 BC, Gaius Marius was elected consul. Marius instituted the Marian reforms of the military, along with them the establishment of a standing army and recruitment of non-property owners. 106 BC. Goodness gracious. Marius was elected consul. The Jugurthine War, the Numidian king Jugurtha was imprisoned by the Mamertine prison. In the Mamertine prison. 105 BC. Battle of Arisio. A coalition of Cimbri and Teutons inflicted a serious defeat on the Roman army at modern Orange. Some 100,000 Roman soldiers were killed. Some 100,000. Can you imagine? 104 BC. Marius was elected consul for the first 3 years in a row. 102 BC. Battle of Aquae Sextae. Rome decisively defeated the forces of the Teutons and Ambrones and killed some 90,000 soldiers and civilians. 101 BC, Battle of Vercellae, or Vercellae, an invasion of Italy on the Cimbri, was decisively defeated by a numerically inferior Roman force. Some 100,000 Cimbri soldiers and civilians were killed along with their king, Boiorix. Boiorix was the king of Cimbri, the Cimbri tribe, during the Cimbrian War. His most notable achievement was the victory against the Romans at the Battle of Arezzo in 105 BC. He was later defeated and slain along with Lugius at the Battle of Vercellae at 101 BC. The other Cimbrian chiefs, you know, amazing. All these people dying all the time, hundreds of thousands, 90,000, you know. You wonder, we're like the sand of the sea, but look what goes on. You know what I mean? I'll see if we can do the first century BC here. It's pretty long, though. Yes, it certainly is. Yeah, and next time we'll get to a little more of this, but this gets wild. It really does. Maybe I'll just stop right here. Amazing. Really, it is amazing. So we'll start at first century BC next time. And you'll be pretty much amazed at what goes on in Rome, like between the Caesars, poisonings and killings. And, you know, these Roman Caesars did not last for lots of years. They died at very young ages and all kinds of things. And so, you know, I had just read that part before. This is like, you know, what we just read here is pretty amazing to see how many wars Rome was at. So as long as the country is in the state of emergency, which is at war, dictators and, you know, special executive orders like in America, they exist. That's why we're at war at all times. So that these executive orders and these special war powers decrees are kept enacted, you see? So if you wonder why America's at war all the time and why, now you know why. See, if they were let it to go to peacetime, they would lose those executive order powers and those war power, you know, decrees and so on and so forth. Those are big powers. You know, they're very dictatorial, you know, dictators. And so now that should make sense to you why America's at war perpetually. It's 1984, George Orwell's 1984 anyway. That's exactly the way it was then, because this would keep the same type of thing, the dictator, Big Brother, in power. You know what I mean? It's just it's deliberately being done. So America will stay at war perpetually. We're at war all the time, whether it's a war against the white supremacists, or it's a war against a fake disease, or whatever it might be. There is very rarely any peace in Rome or in this new Rome. See, in Rome, it was called Capitoline Hill. In America, it's called Capitol Hill. You know, at the end of the Rabbit Hole radio show, I always give a good piece of advice, and that is, you know what it is. Don't go down the wrong hole. The curse is laid upon me.
serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. The sands of time, they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without a face. A man without a face. A man without. A man without a face.